As our moderator said, I'll be talking about implementing culturally competent care for organizations that serve people living with HIV and AIDS. I don't have any relationships to disclose that are relevant to this presentation. And I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues who assisted with this work, Jill Stevens, who's with us here today, and also Dr. Christy Bowden, both of AIDS Healthcare Foundation. By the end of the session today, you should be able to list three culturally and linguistically appropriate service standards. Those are the class standards we'll be talking about. Also to explain how the class standards can affect quality of care for clients, and explain how a healthcare provider can use the class standards to implement a multi-level intervention at their organization. So when we talk about culture, we are talking about race and ethnicity, but we also mean other groups that share identity or share values. So that can be lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, older adults. So there are different groups that fall into these cultural categories beyond just race and ethnicity. And we know that culture impacts how people access healthcare and how they perceive healthcare. So it can impact their beliefs about health, illness, well-being, also how they define disease or illness and how they think those things can be treated. It also affects their behaviors in seeking care and taking medication. And we know that it impacts how they perceive their healthcare providers, but also healthcare providers and staff come to a healthcare encounter with their own beliefs and their own culture, and that impacts how they provide care. The class standards are developed by the Office of Minority Health, and these can be a helpful framework for framing your own work in HIV related to culturally competent care. So there are 14 standards, and those address culturally competent care, language access services, and then organizational support. And in these 14 different categories, there are a lot of different ways that you can approach providing care, and I'll be explaining more about how we did that at AIDS Healthcare Foundation. So our organization started 25 years ago as AIDS Hospice Foundation, and during that time we've evolved to be an integrated healthcare delivery system. We provide care to people at all levels of their of HIV care. So our public health division does testing. We have mobile units. We're also in out-of-the-closet thrift stores doing HIV testing. And then we have a linkage program that provides people who test positive to care at our healthcare centers. So we have healthcare centers all across the country. We're expanding every day. And we also have AHF pharmacies that are co-located with the healthcare centers to make it easy for people to get their meds, HIV, or any other medication. And then we have a managed care division where I work that provides Medicaid and Medicare plans for people living with HIV and AIDS in California and Florida. And then we engage in quite a bit of advocacy work. So this revolves around fair drug pricing. With our health plans, we do provide access to hormones for transgender women who are transitioning. So we do advocacy in addition to our healthcare services. When we look at the clients that AHF serves, most of the demographics are similar to national trends. So we have 39% of our patients are white, 19% African American, and then in California we do see a larger Latino population, so 31% are Latino. The majority of our patients are male, it's 79% male, 17% female, and then 4% transgender women. 32% identify as homosexual, heterosexual, 51% as homosexual, 9% as bisexual, and then we have 8% decline to state or other, and we think that that captures men who have sex with men who don't identify as bisexual or gay. So our cultural and linguistic program at AHF works with providers to provide culturally appropriate services. We take into account how culture affects healthcare needs, expectations, and behavior. And then it requires our providers and staff to work together to provide that culturally appropriate care. And we consider community practice standards when we're working with diverse populations. So I'll be speaking about four areas where we work to implement class standards. We've worked on all 14, but I'll be talking today about standard 3, which is provider and staff training, 4, which is access to language services, 9 is initial and ongoing assessment, and 10 is data collection. In 2011, we conducted a consumer assessment, so we did a health education and cultural and linguistic group needs assessment. This was mostly done through a survey where we asked our patients questions about whether they could receive services that they felt were culturally appropriate, whether they had access to health education materials they needed, access to interpreters if they needed them, and then we also asked questions about their needs, so what areas of healthcare they wanted more information about, and any other ways that we could meet their needs that we weren't already. And we conducted focus groups also with our client advisory committee and with some of our support groups to get more information that way. So through this survey, we were able to identify areas where we were doing well. We found that 68% of our members said that the care they received was culturally appropriate. 90% said that the health education materials they received were easy to read. And then we were also able to identify opportunities for improvement. So there were gap areas that were identified, and then we've used those to frame the interventions that we'll do in our cultural and linguistic program. So I'll be speaking about these in more detail, but one is enhancing our training module for providers and staff. Another is offering health education classes in Spanish. So we've offered them in English for quite a while, but we're just beginning to offer them in Spanish. Explore inclusive practices for transgender clients, and also upload our fact sheets to our electronic medical records. So I'll be speaking about those more too. In 2011, we did a provider-level self-assessment. So again, this goes towards standard 9 of doing self-assessments at your organization. And we used the checklist from Georgetown University. They have a National Center for Cultural Competence. We used a primary care checklist where our providers could take a survey, and there were different areas that were explored. So it was environment, communication, and values. And they completed that survey, and then we were able from there to address areas to work on. There are also surveys now for working with LGBTQ populations, working with people who have mental health, and working with people with substance abuse and other specific populations. So depending on who your organization serves, you can find the checklist that best serves you. So the areas in the survey showed environment, which is access to health education materials, also posters and displays in the healthcare centers that represented the clients who were served. Communication style, so this is their own personal communication style, but also access to interpreters. And then values and attitudes, so these are their beliefs about different cultural groups and how they approach people who have different beliefs about health than they do. And when we looked at our data for our providers, 49% had the most favorable rating for environment, 75% for communication, and 88% for values. So what this shows us is while our providers might personally have culturally competent beliefs and practices, the organization could do more to support the infrastructure to help them have an environment that provides culturally competent care. Standard 3 is to provide initial and ongoing staff training. And in 2010, we had an online module that was mostly based on the class standards that people could complete, but it was highly theoretical and very theory-based, and our staff wanted more information that they could use practically. So this year, Jill Stevens has been working to design our own training modules that address the populations we serve, that include case studies, and that address health literacy and also culture. And so based on our group needs assessment, we know that there were areas where we could serve people better. For those patients who had said that the care they received wasn't culturally competent, the 52% were Latino, 37% were gay men, and 26% were Latino gay men. So specifically, we knew those were areas where we could do better. And so those were enhanced in our training module. We also built modules on African Americans and Latinos and ways to respectfully approach care with those populations, as well as older adults. So much like many organizations that serve people living with HIV, our population is aging, and we wanted to include specific information that would address those populations. For language assistance, one of the class standards is to provide language access free of charge at all points in the healthcare encounter. And so we use a service called Language Line. That's a phone service that people can use to access interpreters. And we know that that helps some people, but we also know that some of our members aren't comfortable with that, especially when you're doing something like taking a sexual history and they're talking to a stranger over the phone that they can't see. And so we've been working to have staff at our four largest high-volume healthcare centers certified as medical interpreters so that we know that the quality of interpretation that they're providing is appropriate. At a lot of places, I think that people do interpret and we don't know necessarily what their skills are. We also discourage our patients from using family and friends to provide services. We know that sometimes people, if they have a friend interpreting, they might not understand medical language. There are also studies that show that family members don't necessarily convey negative information to their family member. They just omit information that's negative. And also when we're dealing with HIV, there's a lot of topics that are sensitive that people might not feel comfortable sharing with a family member or friend. In addition, at our downtown healthcare center, where we see most of the largest percentage of Latino patients, our Latino gay male clients have said that they're not comfortable seeing a female provider. And so we have been working, we just hired a new doctor who's a native Spanish speaker and a male to help provide care there that is culturally appropriate. In terms of data collection, this is standard 10. It is important that your data systems accurately reflect your patients so you know who you're serving. So what we have been working on is an upgrade to all of our IT systems that include information on race, ethnicity, gender identity, and language preferences, spoken and written language preferences. And we've based these categories on best practices. We participate in HEDIS data collection, so making sure we're meeting those categories, but also with different grants that we have, like Ryan White, they use certain categories of race and ethnicity that might be different from other programs, like the State Department of Healthcare Services in California. So we've been working to make sure that all of the categories we need to include are captured. And in addition to building that appropriate information into our systems, what we're doing is a survey so that our members will each get a form to fill out and self-report their own information. And then going forward, once that's all been entered, when people enroll in our health plans or start care, they'll get that information sheet at the beginning so that we have their information from the start. So lessons we've learned, we know that each person comes to a healthcare system with different experiences. We know that all people want to be treated with respect and that each person is different. So while we may see patterns based on cultural groups, we have to remember that each person is an individual who's had their own individual experiences, and we don't want to generalize or assume what they might be liked based on those categories. We also know that all staff need to be trained in order to help the organization advance our goal to provide culturally competent care. And it's always better to learn as much as you can about your clients, especially if you're not from the same groups that they might be, and to ask questions respectfully rather than to make assumptions. So the class standards for us have provided a very helpful framework to address our cultural and linguistic program. We know that we can use data to see what we're doing well, but also where our gap areas or opportunities for improvement are. And we think that all organizations serving people living with HIV and AIDS could implement programs like this to see their own opportunities for improvement and better meet the needs of the clients they serve. Whether that be at the individual level, provider and staff level, healthcare center or facility level, or across the organization. I've included some resources here. So this is our website for AIDS Healthcare Foundation and also Positive Healthcare, which is our managed care program. Also the website for the National Center for Cultural Competence at Georgetown, where you can get the the checklist for culturally competent care. Some language identification flashcards. If you are meeting people in person and need to know which language they speak, they can point to the language so you can provide the interpreter services they need. And then also the National HIV AIDS Strategy is here, as well as my contact information. Thank you.